Off the Ball. GAA.
And any team that has David Clifford, you know, has another chance of winning. You know, I wouldn't have said Armagh were at a back-to-back level, but they're answering all the questions. They're ticking all the boxes.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball.
In partnership with Rockshore. Bring you League of Ireland football. A league of our own.
Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks a million for joining us. You're welcome along to a very special night here at Tribes Bar. We're delighted to be down here with Off the Ball for the evening. We're going to bring you a very special build-up show to tonight's game, maybe a few League of Ireland memories. I think both clubs tonight perhaps want to forget about the last week or so in terms of the people that both clubs have lost, particularly Shelburne, but we'll try and get stuck into that and a bit of nostalgia as well tonight. If anybody wants to throw out any questions, you can fire up your hands and shout them out to us. We can have a nice kind of close relationship here for the evening, and feel free to get nice and close when I bring everybody up. So I think we're actually quite evenly split here this evening in terms of our panel. I think we should bring up the hometown favourites first of all. Can everybody give a big welcome to a woman who's played over 50 times for the Republic of Ireland, a Galway legend, Maeve de Burca. A man who's a legend of multiple things, football, Irish dancing, Galway United, St. Patrick's Athletic, Ricky O'Flaherty, everybody. As I say, probably better weeks than the last week, Joe, but I presume everybody here will be delighted to hear the Shelburne perspective on what's happened there, and no harm to have one of the enemy in your midst tonight. Joe McGuckin, everyone. And of course, the one and only Brian Kerr. Very welcome, folks. Brian, I was speaking to you earlier on. I know you're fairly familiar with Galway. This is a place you've come down as a manager plenty of times, and you know the city fairly well at this stage?
A bit of an idea, all right. Yeah. Always good to come. This is a better ground, though, now than it was when I was managing the League of Ireland, when the pitch was the other way around, and the the dressing rooms weren't great, and you rarely got a shower. But that was, you know, part and parcel of it. It was never easy to get a result it hasn't changed, I think, for any club that's coming now. But thankfully, the facilities are much better. Lovely little ground now, and the pitch is a lot better. One stage we played in a rugby pitch. We came down here.
Clonina.
Clonina. No. Yeah. Well, is that right? Yeah. Well, I couldn't see the name of it because the grass was too high. We arrived anyway for the match at 3 o'clock kickoff, and there was a bloke out cutting the grass with a lawnmower like that me ma used to have in Drimley, right? And he was doing the penalty areas, and if he was left alone, he still wouldn't have the whole pitch done. The grass was so high. But another bloke came in with a yoke. A tractory thing, and he rescued it, and we went ahead and got the match played. I think it was a 1-1 draw to Tony Mannion, but it wasn't a great venue for football at that time. It was when they were turning the pitch around. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. So it was right. It was played in a rugby pitch. Don't mind Stephen Kenny. It was played in a rugby pitch.
Okay. Joe, welcome to Galway.
Thanks very much. It's amazing to be here.
First time at Eamon DC?
First time in Galway.
Is it really?
I think I might have passed through it once.
Okay.
I'm not sure though.
Where were you going that you were passing through?
I don't know. It's not another part of the country.
America, yeah. Yeah.
Everywhere outside the M50 to me is the same. So, could have been. I forgot where I was there for a second.
we will get stuck into the Damien Duff aftermath a little bit later on. But just first things first, general feeling. Are you feeling good about life? Terrible about life? What's the temperature in Joe McGuckin a week on?
Excited.
Okay.
I think hopeful a little bit. I don't know if that's one of the stages of grief when you lose somebody. Yeah. Denial, maybe. Is that that stage?
Yeah.
But hopeful, I think, because I think we have pretty much a full squad now. If Damo just stuck around for another 2 weeks,
yeah,
he'd be in a... Yeah. So I think hopeful. If we can play the same formation that he probably would have, it'd be nice.
How are you? Sure. Maeve, a very good evening to you. I presume Terryland was a big fixture of your childhood growing up?
Yeah, it was indeed. I played Galway WFC for 9 seasons, I think, here. So can't say we won a whole lot, but still really great to play on what I think is the best ground in the country anyway. It's definitely won some awards, and Noel Connolly and everyone who works here does a great job, really keeping it in great nick. And yeah, it's a pitch that's a pleasure to play on, and obviously that wind as well can have a factor. I think Rusha Littlejohn used it recently against the women's team in the wrong way from our point of view, using the wind. But yeah, great venue and lots of good memories. Yeah, won an intermediate, I think, Irish Cup here with Saltwell Devon as well, so that right. probably stands out the most, I'd say.
The pitch does look magnificent tonight, to be fair. You've had a busy enough schedule over the last 24 hours. Do you want to tell us what you've been getting up to?
You could say that, all right. Yeah, just commentated overnight on the Ireland-USA women's game, kicking off at 2:07 in the night, so I don't think there was many people watching it. A few diehards, all right, I could see them online watching, but yeah, not the best result against the number one team in the world, so they were up against it last night, and yeah, busy enough day, got to bed around 4:30, so not
right.
too bad.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, running on fumes at this point. Could I ask, as a spectator coming here, do you remember watching much of The Man Beside You when you were growing up? Do you remember the legend of Ricky?
Yeah, I think maybe even I was probably too young for that.
Right.
But yeah, great memories. Even actually, I met Derek O'Brien recently. I was coaching his daughter. I remember him standing out, you know, and there was some really good teams back in the day. But yeah, Ricky coached me a few times, all right.
On the way.
Yeah, that was, it goes back a good while. We know each other a long time, done a few commentary gigs as well. So I used to struggle to stop laughing, I think, and keep it, yeah. But it was always a bit of crack anyway.
Good coach?
No. he was great, and he could give a really good kind of, I think, attacking viewpoint as well, to show us probably the hardest area that the pitch as well to improve on. So definitely it was really good to have his insights.
Ricky, I think it's fair to say you were a wunderkind of these parts. You were the youngest ever player for Galway United at the age of 16.
At one stage, yes.
Yeah,
I was 16, about 7 months, playing under Paddy Mulligan, and played the first game. My debut was in Dundalk. Yeah, the great Tommy McConville was the centre-back, and I was playing centre-forward, and it was a real eye-opener, so it was the League of Ireland, yeah. Playing against Tommy. I remember he threatened me. I went in high for a ball, and he told me if I did that again, he'd catch my boot and he'd shove it where the sun didn't shine, basically. But the referee, Paddy Daly, great Paddy Daly, I don't know if you remember, came over and he threatened Tommy. And then the great Mike O'Nolan came over and said, "Step back, Paddy." He says, "Tommy, you come near that kid again, he says, I'll kill you." He says. So that was my introduction to the League of Ireland. So it was.
You plenty of protection.
Plenty of protection, yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, that was a great thing down here. We had some great, minders on the pitch. We had Mike O'Nolan, we had the great Eamon Deasy, John Mannion. You know, they were all great players. For any young kid starting off, there were great guys there to kind of come in and protect them and let them go and show what they could do.
From your perspective as a 16-year-old, I was 16 years old and 7 yeah. weeks, was this?
Months.
7 months.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point, obviously, the expectations for you, I presume, are quite high around here. And a few years after that, you go to England for a bit, you go to America for a while.
Yeah.
What happens after that? Why did you change tact, I guess, to move around a small bit?
I don't know. I went over. I had a stint with Wolves over in England, and then I came back and got the opportunity to go to America. Went over playing Gaelic football initially in America, and then I played a bit of soccer over there with a team called Portuguese Sports. Played for a while. Did well with the Gaelic football over there, so I came back then, and I went back into Gaelic football, and then decided to go back with Galway United for another year. And then this man came down visiting Peter Carpenter halfway through the season. But I shouldn't say that. But and Brian had a chat with me in Peter Carpenter's house before the St. Pat's Galway United game, and we managed to do a deal. And he convinced me that he said, "Look," he said, "if you come to St. Pat's, he said, I think we'll win the league.
Right.
And he was very persuasive at the time. Peter Carpenter had lovely biscuits, I must say that, because Brian commented on, he said he reckoned he was paying him too much because he had such lovely biscuits. Yeah. But I ended up, I decided to sign for St. Pat's that year, and we went on and won the league the following year. So it was great.
Had you worked together before, Brian, or what did you know of her?
Youths.
No. Youths.
Youths, yeah. You were, two, who
he, yeah, you were on the fringes of it with
yeah,
Huey.
Under 17.
Huey, but no, it would have been more. I seen you in a few Gaelic matches and said, he'll do for me. we need a little bit of, physicality in the front positions. No, look, all of those lads that played that little spell that they had at Pats, Noel Myrna, Peter Carpenter and Johnny Glynn. Johnny Glynn was actually playing for Cork when he signed for us. He was studying Limerick. But Ricky was leading the line in Galway. We needed a centre-forward there. Centre-forward had gone to... Paddy Dillon had gone to Australia. Joe Lawless went to Bowes. So one thing about that day, when he agreed that he was going to come to us, we played a match later that evening and he scored a couple of goals against us. And I think I let a shout in the sideline, would you ever fuck off? You don't need to show me that you're good enough to play for us. And we went to Eddie Gormley, got a few goals and we won the match. But he was an outstanding player, went back and did a spell with Galway, Peter, Noel. They had a little spell for us. They were great for Pats at that time. We had a really good side. And from a Galway perspective, looking at it, you say it was tough for you was watching them playing. For Pats, playing for a Dublin team and you're in the league. But you have to remember, we were competing with Derry at that time and Dundalk and Cork and Shells. And they all had far bigger budgets than us. And we were the minnows at that time. So I used to think that we represented the minnows in the league. There was a lot of goodwill towards us. Well, they might not have been huge in Galway in particular about the lads playing. But it was a bit of an unusual one for us to have players from outside playing. But I think they remember it fondly. All the lads are remembered fondly with the Pats team. The fact they went back and played with Galway after was good for them as well. And we moved on. I moved on. You stayed on another year, I think, after that. I was gone at the end of the season. Halfway through the next season, I was gone. I took another gig.
Was that just like Damien Duff leaving Shelburne last week out of the blue?
Well, yeah. I'll tell you the truth of that story was that we the FAI, it was still my head in. The youth teams were doing so bad. Ricky was involved with the youth. You involved the youth teams at any stage. But the youth underage teams had done very well with Liam Toohey as manager. I was with him, Noel O'Reilly. And then during the charting years, it was dreadful. And the teams were getting hammered. And it used to do my head in. But the one that did me worse was they played in a tournament in Toulon. And Pat Fenlon was playing for us, for St. Pat's. And he went and played in the under-21s in Toulon and broke his leg. And no one told me. Nobody thought it was fit maybe to ring the manager of the club that he played for. He'd a broken leg. I found out when he got home. This was pre all the stuff, social media, phones, all that. This is in the dark ages, obviously. But that sort of stuff annoyed me. And Curtis Fleming played in the 21s and was messed about. So there was an ad in the paper saying they were looking for a manager for the youth team. And on the particular night, I'd seen the ad and I said, well, they applied for that job. And as it happened, we beat Rovers 4-1 on the day. So I was in good humour. And I drove down to the FAO and I put a note in the door saying I was interested in it. And my plan was to stay with Pats, leave the other job I had and do the Irish thing. But when I went to see the FAO, they said, no, you have to do the whole lot. But I had to give up Pats. But the night I went to leave Pats, the groundsman was a fellow called Harry Boland. He was a legendary bloke, right? And the first day I went into St. Pat's, I turned up for training on my very first night. And he said, are you the new manager, son? Just to put me in place. I said, yeah. He said, I've been here 35 years. I've seen them all come and I've seen them all go, and I'll see you fucking going as well. He said, right? So that's my introduction the first night. And after that, we got along fine. It took a few years. But the last night, anyway, I decided to take the other gig, the FAI gig, and I went to him. Do you remember the house upstairs? We used to have a bit of tea before the matches. And I knocked at his room. He lived upstairs over the boardroom. And he came out. I said, look, Harry, you were right. You said you'd see me come, you'd see me go. And I'm going. I said, he actually said to me, he said, you know something? You're the first fella I didn't want to see ever going. And that was the nicest compliment I ever got in football, because Harry was a hard judge. But so that was what happened, how I ended up going out of paths, not like Duffer.
It sounds very similar. It sounds identical.
It wasn't quite the same story.
Yeah. What was your reaction when it happened, Ricky?
I was very disappointed, because I enjoyed working with Brian. He's a fantastic manager. He's a great guy to, just for player motivation, like he's very good guy. Look, I'll put it to you this way. He asked me to join and he said, I need someone that'll put the ball in the net. If you come in, you score, we'll win the league. So we were 10 weeks into the league, I hadn't scored. And my head dropped, and Peter Carpenter will tell you this, my head was dropped. I said, oh Jesus, look, I was brought in to score. Spoke to him, he noticed before the game, he came over to me and he said, what's up with you? He said, your head is down. And I don't know if you remember this, but he said, your head is down. He said, you look bothered. And I said, I am. I said, look, I don't think I should be playing. And he went, what? And I says, well, I said, you brought me in to score, we're 10 weeks into it. I said, I haven't scored. And as he said, are you fucking mad? He said, you know. He said, everybody around you is scored. And he says, you know. He said, you're flicking it on, you're holding it up. Jesus, we're winning. What's wrong with you? But he said, keep going. He said, keep doing what you're doing. He said, I'm happy. I went out that night, I scored 2.
Right.
And after that, I scored 23 for the rest of the season. Like, so it was just, he was brilliant. He was great at getting the best out of players. And it wasn't just me. It was other players around us. He was great at getting the best. And when he went, I was very, very disappointed. Now, I stayed for another year and a half after that. But I missed him. Yeah,
but he had the Galway man took over from me, so he should have been comfortable.
Yeah. I wouldn't be his best fan and he wouldn't be my best fan. Let's put it that way. Now we're good. We're good now. We talk now.
But
at the time,
later,
myself and Pat, Big Pat, we wouldn't have been the best of mates. We'll put it that way. No, he was very good. No, credit where credit's due. Pat Olin was fantastic for St. Pat's. He's fantastic for the league at the time. Like he was a super guy. We just kind of clashed slightly. But like that was no harm to him. There was no harm to me. But eventually we just had to go separate ways. But he's a good guy, and I've met him since. And we're every time we meet now, there's a big hug, you know, a big bear hug from him. He's a good guy. He is a nice fella, you know.
Just one last question on that. Was it literally just a confidence thing that you were missing at that point? Just a word from Brian just to build you up a bit?
Well, I think so. Well, I was always full of confidence, but it was just at the time, things weren't working. I was hitting crossbars, I was hitting uprights, I was putting them narrowly wide. It was just wasn't hitting the net. And then, just for the last game or two, then I was beginning to half, kind of semi-doubt myself. And then he just turned around, put the arm around me and said, listen, keep doing what you're doing. I don't care if you score once everybody else is scoring. He said, we're top of the league. He said, what's your problem? And it kind of made me realise, we're doing well. I'm doing well. I'm playing well. And then I just went out and bang, bang. They started flying in after that.
It's great. It's pretty simple, Maeve, in terms of, well, it's simple to us on the outside looking in, but some of the managers just have this gift where they can light a fire under somebody, and it seems simple, but they obviously just have a natural ability to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And I know a lot of kind of the attention goes to tactics and formations and this and that. Is your right back coming into centre mid? Is he not or is she not? And, you know, there's a lot of obviously intrinsic details in terms of the tactic side of it. But a lot of it, I think, is the man management side too. It's particularly the manager as such. Obviously, you have coaches as well in the background, but I think it's that personal kind of relationship that managers have, and can they, like Ricky said, get the best out of the players, and how do they do that?
Did you have a Brian Kerr moment in your life?
Yeah, well, I suppose for me, really, the most kind of instrumental that I really had was when Salt Hill started the girls section, like Kieran O'Mahony and a lot of others would have started that. And I think, yeah, even just putting the kind of facilities in place or given the opportunities was really probably the most kind of impact it had on me, in terms of there was no girls clubs in Galway when I started playing, and that was, say, in 2000 Salt Hill started the girls section, and then by 2023 there was actually 23 girls clubs, so right. It was a huge kind of development over time. But yeah, had that not been set up, I think I just would have continued playing one of the other three or four sports I was playing at the time, and you know, at that point, yeah, I would have just taken a different route, I think. So I think, yeah, like that, it's kind of, it's not so much maybe what you're learning on the pitch at times, it's kind of that, yeah, just having the facilities and the opportunity to play, and also that relationship we were talking about.
Joe, you're like myself, football fans, we can't really relate on this level, but
I feel like I'm missing out. I want a Brian Kerr moment. Like, yeah.
But I was going to say, as a filmmaker, as a writer, as a podcaster, there's surely been moments where you felt like that yourself. Who's the Brian Kerr of the podcast world?
I don't know. I get driven by hate rather than positivity. Like, you can do this. It's when people say you can't do it, then I'm like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
It's like reverse psychology in comedy, I think. But yeah, it's different.
For real? Like, has that been something that you've encountered?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A bit of spite. Sometimes you want to succeed in spite of... And that's... I feel like with Shelbourne, with Duff are going, I feel like the players will want to win to spite him. And succeed despite... Is that
despite
a team
him?
Of football? Yeah. Yeah. He brought them to a certain point and then just dropped them at a very pivotal moment in the club's history. And you would want to go out and just succeed to prove a point. Is that a thing? Or are people sad when actually, I shouldn't ask you. Were you sad? did you want to win to spite Brian?
Personally, no. Well, look, talking about Duffer initially.
Go back now. Hold on.
What about the
stand
here?
So hold on. So when I got to be a manager, Pat's, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't played in the League of Ireland. I'd be like you, Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
I was brutal. Right, I played schoolboy football.
I didn't say it was brutal. No,
well, it sounded like you were making it out to spite people, that the people questioned your ability.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
So I got manager. Manager's job at Pat's, and I hadn't played in the League of Ireland, and most people wouldn't have known who the hell I was. And a fella I kind of thought he knew something about the game, he said, look, you've no chance there. He said, they're a junior club, and they'll always be a junior club. And I went, I didn't say it to him, but I went,
yeah, yeah, I'll
Joe,
show you.
I'm a bit of spy, I can show you. And I remember when we eventually won the league, I went, all those fellas that they, so there is a bit,
tell me now, have a go,
you gotta find a way, you know.
Those people came to your head as soon as you won the league?
It was thousands of them.
Really?
Thousands and thousands of them, so, but there was the other thousands who appreciated it as well, you know. No, it was, there was a lot of people who would have thought we had no chance.
Mm.
When you're starting off, when you're scrapping on the team are near the bottom and you don't have much resources and players are constantly leaving, the better players are leaving. That's how it was. But then you've got to do your thing and find a way.
Yeah. Have you played with a heavy dose of spite ever, Maeve?
Maeve, I don't really, nothing really comes to mind, but I suppose when you're playing Dublin teams, offensive,
here we go.
There's always that extra kind of bite. But even, I was just even thinking, you're saying about the Brian Kerr moment or that, I was thinking, you know, at times it can be something maybe a manager tries differently or that. And I definitely recall one game with the Irish under-19s, we played in Germany, and Sue Ronan at the time just played, we never used to play music like back then, but she played a song right before we went out, and I probably had a rare good game, like in terms of, like, we still lost, obviously, but I played well, and it was the first time I think I was playing left back with the team, and after that she just said to me, I think that's your position, and I think it gave me a lot of confidence then, like, after right. that, the following year I was captain of the team, then I went on and played left back for the majority of my career then after that as well, so it was kind of nearly a pivotal moment, I'd say, and I still remember that song, and kind of the feeling of going out. I think with the underage teams as well, there was a lot more of a kind of bond between the groups. Obviously, at senior level, there's a lot more at stake and you're all coming from different countries, different clubs, everything. But definitely that underage level, I think there's kind of even more so of a bond, I would say.
Ricky, do you want to pick up on that point of the Dublin clubs coming to the west of Ireland and having that sense of us against them?
Yeah, well, of course, it was always us against them. And particularly, well, we used to get offended an awful lot down here initially, you know, in the early years, where we would get players coming down here playing in Galway and a lot of the locals wouldn't be played. And we felt at times that there was a lot of local players who were just as good, if not better, than some of the players that were being brought in from the outside. And it was really then under, I suppose, Tony Mannion and Georgie Guest. Just want to mention him. He was our kit man. He's not very well at the moment, but just want to say hello to him. Georgie Guest and Tony were in. Mike Fla was another guy that was involved with the team at the time. And they focused a lot on local talent. And that local team did extremely well because I think we came second in the league at one stage, correct me if I'm wrong, yeah. But it was really down to that. It was, let's show the outsiders, we don't need the outsiders coming in, we can do it on our own. And that worked very, very, very well for a while. Now, obviously, things move on and the professional game moves on. Excuse me, and maybe it's not possible to have a totally local team anymore. But just at that time, it was a very specific time for us here in Galway, and it was probably one of our best teams, I would say. And I'd say a lot of the fans here would agree. Right. You know, it was all locally based. There was one or two, Martin MacDonald came from Sligo, maybe travelled down the road a little bit. Dennis Bonner came from Donegal, but he was one of our own, you know. But these were fantastic players, and 90% of it was locally based. And it was that kind of, in spite of everybody else, we'll show them we can do well.
That can be a powerful thing sometimes. That can be a really powerful thing and a hugely motivational aspect.
Local proud, yeah.
Yeah.
Our local pride and yeah, motivational purposes, yeah. That local togetherness, saying we're all in it together, yeah, really worked.
Brian mentioned earlier on that you kind of mixed it between a few different sports. You were playing a bit of GAA when he went after you. I mentioned in the intro there,
yeah,
the Irish dancing background. Talk to us about this. This is no childhood hobby. This is international success.
give us a demo there.
Yeah. Plenty of room.
My mother, Mairead, was an Irish dancing teacher. Now, everybody, like all my friends tell everybody that I was a world champion. I was no world champion.
Right. Brian told me that earlier.
I was a world champion up here. Yeah. I had a few steps. I used to love to do a few steps. In Shakur, when we'd score a goal, I might do an odd step as I'd walk out, and the lads would love it. And if we went to the Horse and Jockey or McDowell's after the game, if we had won a game, yeah, I'd do an odd step. But
what do you mean a step? What would you do?
Later. I was the Michael Flatley of Inchicore. Michael Flatley. Yeah, but I used to do a lot, and I. But yeah, enough said.
So modest.
But where it did come in, like I did do it as a kid, and I truly believe it did quicken the feet a little, you know, and it did help, you know, in sport, in that your ability to kind of move the feet a bit quicker. Yeah, it definitely worked.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. Did you ever see it in action, Brian?
Oh, look, he was a great centre forward. He scored brilliant goals. I mean, he was quick enough for his feet, but you know, his main assets were his ability to get by defenders and deal with the strength. At that time in the League of Ireland, pitches weren't as good as what we see Terryland tonight and a lot of other pitches around the league now. And the refereeing would have been a bit looser as well. So they used to get battered. He was talking about Tommy McConville, and he would have Dermot Keely probably behind. Yeah. If Tommy didn't kill you, Dermot would.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a rougher game, but he was able to hold his own. He was able to lead the line. He played with a lad, Martin Riley, who was quick. And it was an old double centre forward, a big lad and a fellow who mightn't be as big, but was quick. and they were a tremendous partnership. But some of the great goals he scored in my memory for us were big goals late in games. Like, remember a particular night against Athlone. Athlone were a half decent side in the Premier League at the time, and we were down to 10 men late in the game. And we were down to 10 men from the first half. It was that era where the goalkeeper used to get put off when he dived at a fella's feet and your man went over him. And you got a penalty, a red card, the whole shebang. And we were down to 10 men. They scored a pen on Michael O'Connor. So at half-time, I had to change the system a bit. We left three up. I remember saying to you, play full forward. And we played Brian Maris Rowe and Martin on the wings, three up. And... anyway, we kept the ball up there and we got a penalty ourselves and equalised. But late in the game, we had a corner kick and it was cleared. And John Bourne got it back down into the corner again. And Brian Marceau crossed it. And he headed it in at the far post. And he nearly burst the net when he headed it. It flew into the net. And it was injury time. And it was, you know, it was Friday night. We were playing Rovers on the Monday. And it put us level with Rovers, but if we didn't win that night, Rovers were just getting away a little bit the way they are now. They were getting, and it was a sensational goal, and it was a massive night in terms. And we beat Rovers on the Monday 1-0, and we went on, and he that was the type of goal he scored. But there were lots like that. You remember him battering Bowers in the cup, and getting three goals against Bowers in the cup match one day. But he could score blasting goals. But the dancing feet were handy too.
And then in the celebrations, did you see evidence of the dancing feet?
Well, on a particular night, you know, after the last league match in Dundalk, we won 2-1. He scored the goal that night. We went behind. We needed to win in Dundalk to win the league. Dundalk went 1-0, but he equalised with a magnificent header. You crossed it, did you? You cross it, Rasher. Not you. No. You refed it. You refed it, didn't you? So Peter crossed it, and your man, he had her in. He was out at the edge of the box, and there was a great pitcher. I don't know if he ever saw it after, but he after scoring the goal, the arms were out like that, right? And he was like Jesus himself, right? And it was after being a thunderstorm, there was hailstones come down. They were sitting on the pitch, were like golf balls on the pitch, but there was a rainbow appeared just when your man scored the goal. And there was a great picture I saw in one of the papers of the rainbow behind Jesus with his arms raised after he headed into that. But that was one of the, he could pull those goals out when you needed the goal very badly. That one, the winning goal that night was scored by a fella up there. There's a can behind his ear. Thankfully, he wasn't drinking out of the can on the same night. You see over there on the side with, who was the other, Ricky? Who was beside him there behind him? Stephen Lally. Stephen is Lally, it? Stephen Lally.
Him, yeah.
Yeah. That's Paul Campbell. So Paul, that's after when Galway won the cup final in 82, was it? 91. Paul Campbell, he was known as Soupy. Very original nickname, Soupy yeah. Campbell. So I'd loaned Paul. He wasn't quite in the team. He was a very, very good player. But he wasn't quite in our team. And I loaned him to Galway. And he was, I don't know, was he your man to match in the cup final? But I thought he was brilliant in the cup final. Had a great game. And then he came back to us after. But that night in Dundalk, he stuck a free kick up in the top corner. I think it was a Trevor Brooking when he did it for England. With a free kick outside the box, and it was up there where the stanchion is on this shed. You see in there? It was right in there, with 2 minutes to go. That was it, you know. But your man, the first one, if you don't get the first one, you know, you're not going to get the second one. But that was what he was capable of. But look at all of the we had a good team, but all the four Galway lads were in their own way special. Peter did this thing on the up and down the flank. Look at the fullbacks now, and Andy Robertson and Trent, and all the fuss about the modern fullbacks. He was like that. It was him and Willie Bourke were our fullbacks at that time, and they played up and down the pitch. They didn't stay up the pitch. They were back. We used to play with one up and one back, and when we were attacking on the right, he'd be on, Willie be on, we're attacking on the left, he'd be on, and we keep three, sometimes we keep two, and we let them off, we're chasing it, But talk about modern fullbacks. They were modern fullbacks in the early 90s.
Yeah.
The game has just evolved a little bit. It changes at times. So it goes back to how it was before. You know, Noel Mariner was still a lad in the middle of the pitch. He was a sensational player. Tidy knee. Didn't shout and roar, but just he would have gone into the Manchester City team now, the way Manchester City keeping the ball, moving it, lending it to people, getting it back. And then big Johnny Glenn, they all know what Johnny was like. But they were great players.
What was it like for you, Ricky, coming back here, playing with Pats?
Yeah, do you know, it was great because I always got on well with the lads back here as well. They used to give the other lads a bit more stick. They used to give Cappy, Noli Myrna and Johnny Glynn stick, and then they'd all put their arms around me and they'd welcome me in.
He missed three openers that night, that's
yeah,
why.
Yeah, yeah, but it was grand. It was grand. Sure, look, I mean, this is a great place. It's a great club. Great atmosphere here, great fans here, so there was never any animosity for me anyhow in particular coming back,
right?
And the year then after I leave in Glenavon, then I came back to Galway to finish up.
How do you end up in Glenavon?
I ended up in Glenavon. I fell out with Pat Dolan. I fell out with Pat Dolan.
He was like Joe. He was just passing by.
Yeah. I went outside the M50 and I said, where's this? Am I in Galway? No, you're in Glenavon. I fell out with Pat and I had threatened on retiring. And I met Tony Mannion one day, and Tony came up to me and he says, what's the story? I said, look, I said, I'm not complaining, I'm finished. I had a fallen out with Pat. I said, I'm packing it in. And he said, would you not play? And I said, well, I can't play because I'm contracted to St. Pat's. So he says, well, if you can get a release, he said, we take you back. So, but there was no chance of that. There was no chance of playing anywhere else in the League of Ireland. So he said, if you can get a release, he said, I know Billy Hamilton. He said, he'll take you at Glenavon. He said he was ringing down asking about you. So I contacted Tim O'Flaherty, who was the chairman at the time, and he put me on to Phil Mooney, and Phil gave me the release. Now, it was meant to be a temporary release, but that's how I ended up in Glenavon. I went up then and I played for the rest of the season with Glenavon. We got to a cup final. We came up, I think, about third or fourth. I played, I think it was 18 games in total and scored 12 goals with them.
So, were you living up there?
Yeah. No, actually, that's a good story. I was travelling, right? So they said to me, we'll fly up. And I said, great. I says, and where will I fly from? They said, you can fly from Shannon. Sure, that's right beside you. I said, yeah, sure, no problem. So I used to fly from Shannon on a jumbo. Right? It was the flight that came back from New York that landed in Shannon that flew to Belfast. And I used to get collected from. So there was one, I think it was the third week that I was gone. There was a photographer from the Sunday World in Northern Ireland was at the foot of the steps. I was the only person on the flight, right? On a jumbo jet going from Shannon. Well, we were only up when we were down, right? It was coming back from New York, but everybody got off in Shannon, so I was the only one. Little bag with my boots in it. And I coming down the steps.
It sounds like a bus.
This guy was chick, taking pictures. The following week in the Sunday World, they had a picture of, I think it was Paolo Maldini in a private jet. Somebody else in a private jet. This is Glenavon, Ricky O'Flaherty, jumbo jet. back page, they were saying the most expensive kind of travel in European footballer was Ricky O'Flaherty.
Most expensive player in Europe. Most expensive player in Europe.
The most expensive player or travel in Europe at the time. I was flying by jumbo jet for the game.
Oh, that was amazing.
But I did that for a couple of months, and then after that I decided I'd drive to Dublin. So I used to drive to Dublin and I'd meet up with Paul Byrne. Paul Byrne was up there. Boots Grant Boots Grant.
Tony Grant, yeah.
So we used to meet up in the car and then drive up from there.
Right. That was a more normal way of doing things.
That was the more normal way. Yeah. Now, when you say that, Paul Byrne was gas. He was a lunatic. So he was. But that was another experience altogether. We'll talk about that some other time. Yeah. But he was a great lad, another great lad. Come back from Celtic. So he, like, whatever about us playing from the Republic, playing up there, like him returning from Celtic to play up there. He got some.
Yeah, but he played for Bangor before. He went from Bangor.
Yeah,
Bangor to Celtic. Lane Brady signed him. Yeah. He scored in the cup final, I think, for Bangor. Then he scored for Celtic against Rangers in the cup final as well.
Yeah. So Paul Byrne. He didn't have many fans up there.
I should say a big thanks to Rockshore tonight for having us down here at M&DC Park. They are the official beer partner of the League of Ireland. It's a great atmosphere here, so feel free to throw up a hand and ask a question if you want. We'll get into some of the more current stuff in just a few minutes' time. But we were chatting on the way over here about Moses Dyer and going off to Cambodia, and there's not too many people who've made the move from Ireland to Cambodia. Looking forward to that slot. But it just got me thinking about all the kind of exotic places that maybe people in our panel might have been tempted to go and play for. I'm not sure, Joe, did you have any opportunities? Like, Maeve, your CV is unbelievable in terms of where you've been. Was that actually an appeal for you as a player to go and be, you know, the Irish person on the team as opposed to going somewhere where loads of Irish were?
I suppose I didn't really have a choice because there was no League of Ireland for women.
Right.
It was at that age where I needed to be playing regularly. So I went to America really by default. The coach over there had come and watched the Ireland under-19s play, and his dad was from Galway. So, yeah, straight away then I went over, and that was kind of the start of it. And then I ended up, after being in the kind of bright lights of New York and America, I ended up in a town with 20,000 people in Norway, in the south of Norway, with nothing else to do except train. So used to train up about 8 times a week maybe, and you always had one day off, but it was great because you had no distractions or anything. But again, probably not a place I would have decided on, but it was one of the few places that you could play full-time professional back then. Like, that was 2012 maybe, so it's moved on a lot now obviously from then. And Sweden after that, but I think along the line I had thought of Russia actually. I remember sending a lot of emails, and the money was obviously like way, way better than anywhere else. But
how close did that come to happening?
Not too close, thank God. Someone tipped me off and had found out that there was a lot of kind of bad stories that the foreign players would maybe on the buses, the other players would get handed back their laundry, and then the foreign players would get theirs handed back dirty. So and just a lot of even a coach tipped me off saying it's not very democratic, and are you sure you want to do this? And
really?
Yeah, I'd been to Russia. Actually, it was after that. I think I'd only been to Russia once, and it was combined doubleheader away to Kazakhstan as well. So Russia and Kazakhstan in the one away trip was probably the worst we've ever had, really. Kazakhstan was an experience. Yeah, we had a chef who was meant to travel with us, but got stopped at the border because he had ripped out a page out of his passport to write a phone number on. So I don't know if he couldn't have written it on his hand or something, but anyway, he was stopped at the border, and we didn't have a best of experiences. There was, we went outside. I remember coming back and the girls saying, oh, isn't it awful that we're not allowed outside? And I looked to Nifahi and she looked back to me, and we were after been outside for a walk, you know. But back then, I think girls weren't allowed to be outside in shorts, but we were in our kit wondering why people were looking at us. So, yeah, definitely different cultural experiences, places that you'd never, have thought of ending up. And even when I went traveling without a ball, I always ended up somehow playing a match or something, even in Buenos Aires, playing a five-a-side with local lads, or in Vietnam, I stopped in Ho Chi Minh City to play a train with the Vietnamese champions at the time. We didn't speak the same language, but through Google Translate, I managed to set up, been able to train with them, and just played a training session. Didn't speak any word of, they didn't speak English, I didn't speak Vietnamese, but kind of shows it, just once you're on the pitch, really, you can let the football do the talking in a way. And yeah, plenty of experiences to.
Unbelievable.
Think about, yeah.
That must have been something else, going straight into professional football for the first time, and then also being in a tiny Norwegian town of 20,000 people.
Yeah, it was those days. It was tough because, and also it was so expensive there compared to here at the time. So, our wages weren't really reflective of the standard of living. So, yeah, it was. I think it was good for me at the time, probably because at that point I really wanted to try it and play full time, but I also knew after the year it wasn't something that I probably wanted to do long term, because you're just sitting around, and although it sounds amazing now, had I been paid millions to do it, I probably would have been maybe thinking a bit differently, but you're just sitting around doing nothing really apart from training, and it really influenced, I think, football then at that point. If you're going well, winning and playing well, life was fantastic, and then suddenly if you got an injury or you know, you lost a game, then, you know, you're thinking, oh, gee, everything is so bad. And I think that's kind of a danger maybe, that like you always need an outside, something else to be focusing on too. So I think it suited me a lot better when Galway WFC started the team here, like based out of Terryland, obviously, before the Galway United women's team, that I could then balance playing and working as well. I think it probably suited me a bit better and probably enjoyed it maybe even more so maybe than playing full-time professional.
For sure. Yeah. Really interesting. What a career. So to chat about what's happened in the last couple of weeks then, Joe, do you want to kick us off here on Damien Duff? Like, given you are, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Shelburne fan, like, just to excavate that a little bit further about the bitterness point or the spite point that we were talking about earlier. Is that tongue-in-cheek or is that actually how the Shelburne fans have
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of Shelburne fans biting that tongue a little bit.
Right.
Like, they're angry. They're pretty pissed off. And I'd say, rightfully so, I kind of feel like a jilted bride's on the aisle, at the altar. Do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like, we were about to do something great together. Yeah. Where are you after going? Like, you know, he just sort of disappeared. So, yeah, I think there's a frustration. And it doesn't matter, I don't think, anyway, as a fan, I'm obviously not a professional footballer or manager, but as a fan, I don't care how much you've done for the club in the last year or 2 years. Like, it's a pretty shitty thing at a bad point to just leave, and in the manner that, like, you know, that he did.
Is it because Europe is just coming down the tracks and there's a really important few games coming?
Yeah.
So later now, in the year would have been okay?
I think it's a blessing in disguise that we were drawing against Linfield, because I think we could stand the chance without Duffer to get past them. But if we had gotten a tougher draw, then it would have been a lot worse. And it still is bad. But, you know, the players are still the same. I think he can keep his formation for the next, until a full-time manager comes in, unless Joey O'Brien keeps his. Does that normally happen? Assistant managers come in and then just keep the?
We've seen a set piece coach get a Premier League job this week, so there's big promotions to be given out. Brian, what's been your opinion on the last week?
In relation to
to Duff.
Oh, no, I thought you meant Galway beating Pats 3-1. Yeah. Well, Damien, what can I say? I don't think it was too sudden that Damien, after the match against Derry on Friday night, that Damien suddenly Saturday was thinking about it and decided on Sunday when he met the players, I'm getting out of here. I don't think that. I think it's been a build-up. I think he's been quite controversial this year. I mean, I think everybody around Irish football knows he's done a brilliant job, and he's brought a brilliant profile to it. I mean, he spoke to me before he took the Shells job, and funny enough, I did say to him at that time, now, I said, look, if the fella with the balls doesn't turn up on time, or the balls are a bit soft, you can't throw the head and pack it in. Or if the bloke marking the pitch gets it a bit wrong, you can't. Sometimes in the League of Ireland, everything isn't exactly as perfect and as professional as you'd like it to be, and you've got to stick with it. And he said, no, I'll go with it. I said, no, fine. But I said, I'm just saying, sometimes it can be a very frustrating game if you like everything to be quite perfect. And as he said the other day, I prepared very well for the match against Derry. I wasn't out in the sun. I didn't have I had a siesta. I had a rest. But some of the play. So I thought there was something wrong, where he was being quite critical of the players, critical of the FAI, critical of getting into a row with Stephen Bradley. You know, there was a previous row with another manager. I just didn't think that was really his form, and I thought that he was at boiling point on the touchline all the time, but getting hotter and hotter.
It was like from day one.
Yeah, but he wasn't last year when you were winning all the time.
Yeah,
he was much calmer in matches I saw. But in the matches I've seen this year, I felt he looked a very frustrated figure. And I have to say, on the sideline, in general, the league has gone mad. The behaviour of the managers and coaches and people on the sidelines now towards the referee, the fourth official, the linesman, has just got to an extreme. I can't understand how the league and the FAI are not standing over it, but not taking stronger action against managers and coaches. Again, I'll go back, I wasn't by any means a saint when I was managing myself in terms of dealing with everybody. But there was a line that I wouldn't have crossed after a couple of years of experience. But now it seems to have gone where anything goes. And you might get a yellow card, and you might get another yellow card, but I think it's 2 weeks. But they seem to be on the edge all the time. So I'm very disappointed to see Damien pulling out of it. I hope he comes back in to the league. Whether he comes back into Shelbourne or not, he made a lot of statements that I thought were a little bit tight, like too tight, in terms of saying, well, this could be the only club, this is my club. Damien wasn't a Shelbourne man 10 years ago, you know, or 5 years ago, or when he was 18. Like, I used to see him out in Bray, watching Bray, when he was playing for Blackburn and Chelsea. He wasn't a Shells man. But then he became a Shells man because he's a manager and he identified with the crowd and the crowd identified with him. But then do you cut yourself off and say, I can never manage anyone else in the League of Ireland again because this is my club? So now he's done 3.5 years. Has he finished in the League of Ireland? Or does he go? He has said he doesn't want to go back to Britain. Doesn't want to go to England. I hope he's not lost to the game because he's been a fantastic manager, a fantastic representative. I mean, people weren't interested in the league to the extent they are now. We're all mad about the league. We're all mad about following our teams and watching what's going on in the league. But there's a lot of people out there that hadn't got that interest. And for me, he was kind of the source of general interest that came, that a lot more people were interested in what's going on in the league, because Damien Duff, 100 caps for Ireland, one of the best players ever played for Ireland, went off and did his thing, did a bit of coaching, got a job at Celtic, was up the ranks, he's on the bench with Celtic, goes in, does a bit with Stephen Kenny, pulls out of that, does the punditry on RTE and the television excellently. And now he's in the League of Ireland as a manager, and suddenly lots and lots of people are looking at it in a different light, that he was prepared to take that on. He was like a catalyst for it. And I'm disappointed that he's not staying. Not from, you know, there would be people who look at him and say, I'm glad he's gone. Shells mightn't be as good as they were while he was there. But for the people, well, these people tonight, we'll see. Joey might do a great job.
Yeah.
He's a very, very good fella, Joey O'Brien. Lovely fella. Very good football fella. But, you know, tonight is about Galway. What they've been doing this year has been the start of the season great, well up the table, up in the first position, 1-2 early on the season. Then it fell off, natural fall off a bit, lost 4 matches in a row in May, then come back a bit. Still holding their own, still very much in contention. They're only, 6 points off second place at the moment. You know, they're really in touch. Shells are in that position where they need to get back in. Are they right for the match with Linfield? But Damien, I don't think he made his mind up because they lost to Derry. In the same week, they lost to Rovers on the Friday night. They beat Pats on the Monday, and then they beat Derry. Or they lost to Derry, and he didn't wake up on Saturday morning and said, I've had enough of this. I think it was coming over time.
Ricky, do you want to come in on the Duffer conversation, just in terms of what, like, your view of him was as a massive League of Ireland man?
I have to agree with Brian there. I think he was fantastic for the league, you know, when he came in. The one thing that I really liked him, and we spoke about it earlier, was he protected his players, but he put the onus on the players for their performances. You see, I think an awful lot of the managers nowadays protect their players too much. the likes of Stephen Kenny, Stephen Bradley, even our own John. When things go wrong on the pitch, they take the blame on their shoulders. Whereas the one thing I liked about Damien Duff, he went, I've done as much as I can off the pitch, now it's on to ye. And he was trying to get his players to take ownership and take responsibility. And that's the one thing I liked. And I think players...
But Ricky, that was at the end, right? Yeah. But if you watch at the matches, in my view, he didn't let the players... He didn't let the players make decisions. Damien was making decisions for the players. Every move and every... So now it was very effective. And maybe I was the same myself. So I'm not criticising for it. Maybe I was. Or maybe I shouted at you, Ricky, get over! Right? A few times. But, that is not how it looked. It was how he talked the other night. Yeah. And he said, I was doing everything. Myself and Joey were doing everything.
I don't think that criticism of the players kind of was there publicly until more recently, like last year. I don't think it was there as much probably as...
No, you're right.
Definitely in the
They lost two key players last season. And then this season, like, they had a centre-back. He was injured. And then Lewis came in. He broke his foot in the first game, but he got man of the match in that game. And then Coyle stepped into that. Like, he dropped back into it. And so they were lost in the middle. Like, it was Andy were lost in the back. They were lost all over the place. And now we have a full squad back. And this is when he's leaving, though. That's what I don't get. Like, I know he's annoyed with a squad, but he didn't have a squad to be annoyed with. Like, he didn't have a formation to play with. He didn't have a team to play with. And now he does. And now he's leaving. And we actually played really well against Derry. There was, like, 23 shots on goal. Like, it was... I thought you played very well against
Pats. And I thought you played well. I watched the match with Derry, and I thought you played well in both the matches. So, you know, it was something that was going on for a while. He didn't just suddenly say, I don't want to be involved with the game at Linfield in the European Cup, which is a high-profile game. I think it'll be a tough game. It's not like Rovers and Larne last year. It'll be a very, very tough game. Linfield are better, more experienced, really serious club. I think it'll be tough. But, you know, it's obviously been something that's been building up with him for a while.
For sure. Maeve, you mentioned earlier on that you played football in Southeast Asia and Thailand. Were you ever tempted to play football in Cambodia?
Can't say I've been to Cambodia, but I definitely didn't kick a ball there. One of the few countries I didn't.
Clearly you missed an opportunity. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent this evening saying that Moses Dyer has landed a package with Cambodian club Phnom Penh Crown that is worth over $100,000 per year after tax. That is US dollars. Helps us, he says, understand maybe why he made an abrupt departure. Is Galway angry this week as a result of this? Is it water off a duck's back? What's the feeling? Angry.
Confused. Yeah.
Well, confused. Yeah, a lot of people are confused. To be honest, I only learned it coming up to the game today. I was going to start singing. I was going to say, I expect Moses Dyer to score tonight. And then one of the lads said to me, Jesus, he's gone. And I went, well, I was going, what? So it has come as a shock. Now, we knew he was suspended, right? We knew he was suspended. But it has come as a huge shock. I mean, it's come out of the blue. I'm sure all the fans here will wish him well, because he has been a revelation for us. I personally loved him. I loved him because he had a bit of strength, he had a bit of battle, there was a bit about him. I'm sure he did a little bit of Irish dancing at some stage because he had some great feet, he was well able to move. But he was quick, he was agile, he had a good eye for goal. And I a lot of the time I think the referees were a bit harsh on him because he was just physical. He was just physical. He wasn't a nasty player, he wasn't a dirty player, and yet... A lot. He had frees given against him at times. He was superb for Galway, and initially they didn't think it was going to work out, because I remember speaking to Ali Horgan at the beginning of the season, and he says, "We've a lad in from New Zealand." I don't know, he says, and he turned out to be fantastic. You know, so look, I'm sure all the lads will wish him the very best. What he did for us in his short time here, we'll always remember him. He was very, very good. And we'd wish him the best. And you can understand it. I believe He's going there because he wants to play for his national team in the World Cup next year. And seemingly, well, it is a shorter distance from Cambodia to New Zealand if he has to go home for games. Like if he had to fly from here for friendlies or whatever, he'd never
be. You not get your jumbo jeffers now?
Well, I was going to offer it to him tonight, but he's gone. So, but unfortunately he's gone. He was a superb player. And he was just beginning to get a little connection there with Pat Hickey. Himself and Pat Hickey were working really well together. And that's something now we're going to have to. No, saying that, there are players coming through. Hopefully, John gives them their opportunity, and hopefully, we see somebody else stepping into that role that Moses filled for the last number of months.
That notwithstanding, are you feeling positivity, Maeve, around Galway at the moment when it comes to the club? As Brian said earlier on, what is it, 8 points? 7 points even, is there 8 points off second spot at the moment in the League of Ireland?
Yeah, exactly. It's so, although we're in seventh place, I think it's so tight still. Yeah. A couple of games swing in the right direction and, you know, we'll be right up the top end hopefully again. But yeah, you can even feel the atmosphere, I think, even in Naaman DC Park has kind of changed in the last few years. It's obviously success is going to bring that naturally anyway when you're back up in the top division. But I think that's one aspect that's really, I think even the players, they often speak about that, is the kind of atmosphere that comes here. And I'm sure as away fans as well, and the away teams, they don't like to play on the pitch, but they don't like to come here for the atmosphere, you know.
Yeah. What sort of job is John Caulfield doing, Brian?
I think John is doing a great job. He is obviously a very experienced manager, and he knows how to set up the team to be effective. I don't think, you know, when Galway in the Premier League, I wouldn't say that they have to be quite inventive in terms of signing players. I mean, where they got Moses Dyer from? Like, I wouldn't have said there was a lot of Galway scouts in New Zealand. Or is there a lot of Cambodian scouts in Galway? That's the other question. But, you know, Ollie talking to Ricky, you're saying, sometimes you have to take a bit of a risk and you're checking out information, and you have to have people that you can trust who are giving you information and that they understand. You'll have all loads of agents from all sorts of places trying to give you players and trying to sell you players. And the most important aspect of being an agent is that you have to be a very good lawyer, not a lawyer, lawyer spoofer, right? Because you've got to convince managers to take players that nobody else wants. Right, so he was in a position where nobody wanted him, and he ends up in Galway, and he hits the mark, and he starts going. So Galway, I think under John, they've been very, very, very competitive. They've a way of playing that's, I'd say, mixed in terms of style. I don't have a problem with how teams. I don't have this purist idea about how a team should play and that every team should try and play the same way as Manchester City did for so many years. I think you've got to play with the players you have and the resources you have. You've got to respect that. And like, I understand that Galway make the best of the resources they have. You've got quick players up front, you play fast, you get up to them. You've got fellas that you can head it, get it into positions where they are effective. There's no point in building it up. So I think John has done a really good job with the resources he has to get them into a position where they're challenging. Missed out last year, had a very good season. But this year, they're in with a shout this year. They're not going to win the league. I think Rovers, like, Bowes might get into contention, but I think Rovers will win the league comfortably enough. But after that, there's places there, European places up, and the cup hasn't started yet. So I think John has done a really good job, and he's kind of nurtured this us against them thing as well here, which you've all made reference to. That's all, you know, that's all game ball by me. I used to do it in Inchicore in a different setup. Dermot Keely, I mentioned him earlier. He said to me one day after we'd beaten Rovers again, he said,
Ewes. He said, yes, I like the village team playing in the big league. Yes, they're all related to each other and you can't beat us, right? And I said, we'll have a bit of that. Yeah. We'll have a bit of that. But that's okay. That's fine. But, you know, every team has to find their own way to do it. And that's why I've always admired Sligo and Galway and Cork and Finn Harps. Less Derry. Because they've always had heaps of money to take fellas and players and so on. Or generally, but look, I loved going to Derry with teams as well. But I've always admired those teams scrapping. And Longford, when they had their spells, when they won the cup a couple of times alone, I'd love it. Just love to see those clubs getting back to being as competitive as Galway are.
Joe, who's going to win tonight?
It'd be a one-all draw, I reckon.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. Is that boring, is it? I'm glad, though, that your man Dyer's gone, because he scored two against Shells earlier on in the season.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Won't be around to score tonight.
Ricky, what do you reckon?
I think Galway just a pippet. I think Big Pat Hickey to get in, header at the far post.
Good stuff, Maeve.
1-0, something similar to that McCarthy goal the last night. Route 1 will do me as well. I don't
Brian
mind
Kerr.
How they're scored.
I think I'd probably go for Galway 2-1, but not with any. Oh, look, the whole league this year has been so unpredictable to say how any team is going to go in any match. The results have fluctuated so much. Teams are good for 2 or 3 weeks and then they lose to it. So it's hard to know. But I think Galway, in a bit of a vein of form, I think they have a bit about them at the moment.
Right, very good. Just once again to say a massive thank you to Rockshore, official beer partner of the League of Ireland, for having us down here in M&DC Park tonight. And thank you once again to Brian Kerr, to Joe McGuckin, to Ricky O'Flaherty and to Maeve de Burke. Give them a big round of applause. Thank you so much.